I've got a passel of sitting judges. I've got a passel of wannabe judges. I probably have a gazillion years of legal experience, Chris, in the office. I could sign, I could get like deals right now and have Judge X show on TV One. We could supply TV One with enough judge shows to last. Anyway, more candidates who are running for the Democratic nomination for Marion County Superior Court. Some are incumbent judges. Others are who want to assume the bench for the first time because there have been some retirements of current judges. Got a number of folks in the House. And what we're going to start out with our standard question, go around to each one of these candidates in alphabetical order and ask them why they're running and what kind of background and experience that they bring to it. And we're shuttling them around. I'm like the bailiff here. I'm like the guy on Judge Judy that says, Judge, here's the next case. So let's start with incumbent Judge Annie Chris Garcia. Annie, why are you running?
I am running. I have been an elected judge since 2008. I was appointed in 2007. To fill a vacancy by a judge who was appointed to the federal court. My background has always been in criminal law. I've been a judicial officer for the last 19 years, only 7 years as an elected judge. And I bring to the table a public servant's heart.
Judge Barbara Cook Crawford, why are you running? You're on the bench now. You were appointed by Governor Daniels to fill a vacancy.
Yes.
And now you're running for a term in your own stead. Why are you running?
Well, I have learned a lot since I've been on the bench since 2010, replacing Judge Tanya Walton Pratt. And I've had a lot of experience primarily in the criminal arena, but I have been an attorney since 1988. Since that time, I have worked as a public defender. I've worked as a deputy attorney general, and I've worked as a deputy prosecuting attorney here in Marion County. So I've covered the whole gamut from criminal law and through the civil arena. And right now I am in a criminal court, and I have learned a lot in that court. I hope to continue that. And the most important thing I think that myself and all of the other judges here who are in the room with me, we understand how important this position is. We understand that everyone deserves the opportunity to be heard. And everyone deserves the opportunity to be treated with respect. And that's something I think that each of the recommended candidates understands. They've had the experience with doing it. And that's the reason I'm running.
Angela Davis is running for the first time as a Superior Court judge. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this is not the Angela Davis I grew up with when I was in college back in the day. A little different Angela Davis, right?
Just different, same name. So you can remember who I am.
There you go. Why are you running?
I am running because I am fair, hardworking, and I believe in our justice system. I grew up in Little Rock. I graduated from Little Rock Central High. The school had significance. Before I got there, I moved to Indiana and went to DePaul, got a degree in economics, and decided to continue to go to school and went to law school at IU. I've been in practice for almost 20 years. I've mostly done part-time and full-time public defender work, and I've done hundreds of criminal trials, and I'm working on my 25th murder case right now. But I want to become a judge because I think that our system can be better. A good friend told me that in the past, in our past generations, that if something's broken, you get it fixed, whether it be the washer or dryer or cars. But in our generation and, my kids, if it's broken, we throw it away and get a new one. And I think that that's what we're doing with people. If they're broken, we put them in jail instead of trying to fix them. And I believe that there should be more options instead of jail and to try to limit the community corrections. I think there needs to be some expansions, and we need to look for alternatives, and that's what I'm going to do if elected.
David Dreyer is running for re-election on the Marion County Superior Court bench. David, why are you running again?
I think, like everybody here, Hamas, I'm running again. I want to be a judge because I care about people. I care about the community. And it's a great opportunity to serve, mm-hmm. and it's an honor to serve. I've been a lawyer 33 years, I guess. I've been an LSO attorney. I've been a prosecutor. I've been a private attorney in private practice. I've been a criminal judge, civil judge. So I've got a broad background in lots of different areas of law. But what it all comes down to is law is about people. And Democrats, we're all proud to be the recommended judicial candidates for the Democratic Party. And that's what makes us different, because the Democrat Party cares about the community, cares about people. It's not just applying the law by the letter. Right. It's always looking at all the intangibles and balancing that with the people and the circumstances and, you know, making a fair and just decision. And that's what we're all here to do. That's why I'm doing it. I know that's why everybody here is.
Chatrice Flowers, you're running for the first time for the Marion County Superior Court judge. Why are you running?
For a number of reasons, just as my recommended colleagues have spoken before me, but I have a passion for public service work. I am dedicated, reliable, and I am experienced. I have spent the majority of my legal career in the public sector. Mm-hmm. I've been a lawyer almost 15 years. I started off at a small private practice, and then I went to the Marion County Public Defender Agency. I was there for 4.5 years. I then went to the Office of Corporation Counsel, also known as City Legal, for 14 months, and I represented the city and state in a federal court and in state court for civil matters. And then an opportunity arose, and I became a master commissioner with the Marion Superior Courts. And at the time, the elected Democratic judges hired me to sit for them. So I have been a master commissioner, which is an appointed judge, for almost 9 years. Mm-hmm. I sit in 5 courts a week, 4 criminal courts, 1 civil court. So I have had the advantage and privilege of sitting in civil court and criminal court on the bench. And I want to be elected just to follow up, because I would like to have a say-so. And as master commissioners, you don't have a say so, and everyone's
y'all
laughing.
The ones that, the master commissioners, that's the ones in the blue robes.
It used to be we all have black robes now, but they're a little different from the elected judges.
Oh, okay.
But I would like to have a say so in decision making.
All right. Christina Kleinman, you are running for the first time as a Superior Court judge. Why are you running?
Well, much like Chatrice, I also started as a public defender, and I think, like everyone here, I do. Public service is the number one priority. Mm-hmm. And I also had an opportunity to become a master commissioner about 5 years ago. I haven't had quite as much time as Chatrice. I started off in major felony court with Judge Hawkins and have been doing that for the last almost 5 years, and then got to branch out into the civil arena as well. And I understand what a tough job this is. I think it's a bit of a lonely job. And I think that people underestimate how important it is, not only in the individual cases, but about getting along with each other. Mm-hmm. And I have spent a lot of time with the people in this room, not only on the campaign trail, but in our actual jobs. And if this justice system is going to move forward in any capacity, it has to be done together. And that's why I'm here.
James Osborne, you're running for re-election as a Marion County Superior Court judge. Why are you running?
Well, that's correct, Amos. I'm running primarily because I look at the justice system as a system that has an immense amount of power. And I come from a background where power can often roll over people who don't have the ability to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. My goal in my adult career as a lawyer has always been to try to help people who may not be able to do what they need to do to protect themselves, either in a criminal setting, a civil setting. And that's why being a judge is very important to me, because I want to make sure that the concept of the court as being a great equalizer is upheld. And I see that as my primary role. I've been on the bench for 6 years. I've also served in both the criminal and civil court benches as a judge, and I've got the privilege right now of serving as one of the associate presiding judges of the executive committee. That's the committee that basically runs the administrative side of the courts as well. So I'd agree with Christina in the sense that we do have to work together a great deal, because even though we're all individually elected, mm-hmm. You're talking about 36 judicial officers who have to work together in a consolidated, cooperative fashion to make sure that change occurs and that justice is done.
Marcel Pratt, you are running for the first time for the Marion County Superior Court judge. Why are you running?
That is correct. And first off, thank you, Amos Brown, for having the 8 recommended candidates for the Democratic Party here today. I am running, Amos. I have been in this community for 30 years now. Although my title during that 30 years was a private practitioner, in my practice, I think I've served the community here in Indianapolis very well. With that 30 years of experience, I think it's a great opportunity now to move into the arena of a judicial officer so I can continue trying to make a change on a daily basis. I think I'll actually have a greater opportunity because I'll have a bigger influence on each individual that will come before me. You mentioned we don't know what slot we may wind up in, but I'm truly and honestly going to say I hope I get a criminal slot. Because over the past 15, 20 years, that's been my concentration. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of work that can be done in our community in that area.
Let me ask, before Judge Osborne gets out of his seat to share a seat, I got to ask you, this came up in the previous panel where they were talking about we need much more the electronic paperwork and enter the last half of the 20th century in terms of the paper flow of the Marion County Superior Court. Where are we with that? And if you all are reelected and elected, where do we go in that process?
Well, that's a really good question, and we are in the middle of transitioning from a paper system to a paperless electronic system. We've already completed that transition to some degree in the civil courts. I oversaw the transition from what we call the justice system, and that's JUSTIS. Mm-hmm. It was our computer system, our case management system, that was created back in the mid-80s and has become very antiquated since. And in fact, we can't even hire people to work on it because nobody even knows what the language is for the program. But we've switched to a program that's called Odyssey. That's a statewide system that we've adopted along with at least half of the other states or other counties in the state. And so we're well on our way to making that transition. The criminal side will be going to Odyssey here in the next month. I think in the middle of June we'll be running the criminal Odyssey system.
So wait, I can sit in my office, see what y'all are doing, and not have to pay some third party a whole lot of money that comes out of my check and not the company's check?
That's exactly correct.
Uh-oh, Chris. What a bargain for me. But that also opens up the process and let people know what's going on.
It absolutely does. And you make a good point that it has cost people money if they want to find out what's going on in their cases or other people's cases. This is a public court system, mm-hmm. And we certainly want to make it as available and as accessible as we possibly can for anybody who's interested in what's going on.
Let me ask, and Dave Dry, you want to weigh in on this, but I also want to ask a larger question and those that want to come and weigh in on this. The community's perception of a judge versus the reality. I think the community assumes that, you know, once a defendant has been found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, either in a bench trial or by a jury, and then it comes to the judge for sentencing, there's a perception that the judges can do whatever they want. They have wide latitude in terms of sentencing. What is the if you can comment on it, because there's a lot of restrictions on what you can answer and cannot answer, what is the reality of that? You know, in terms of what the actual reality is, because there is a lot of that perception. Oh, hey, when it gets before the judge, judge can do whatever they want to do. And just, you know, say your names. Everybody knows who that is not me talking.
I'm Judge Annie Christ Garcia. I'm currently presiding in a criminal defelony setting.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have a question?
No, go ahead.
When a case comes to you, it comes to you in a myriad of ways. It'd be either after a jury trial or a bench trial. Mm-hmm. If there is a plea agreement, it could be an open plea or a set term plea. So when the case is presented to you, to the judge, there are guidelines that you would have to follow based on an agreement. There are statutory guidelines that are advisory sentences that are based on aggravators and mitigators that we can consider.
Right.
Jokingly have said that, do you remember what an Etch-a-Sketch is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you could take it and let's say you'd have a drawing, right, and you could take it and shake it and clear. That's how when a case comes to me, I like to think that the person's coming with a clean slate, that you're hearing the facts that are presented and you're going to make a decision on what you hear and what you see in the court, just like a jury does. For a sentencing, oftentimes a guilty plea is an agreed-upon term with the state of Indiana and the defendant. Other times, after a jury trial, it would be up to the court, and the judge considers their criminal history and the facts right. that human being engaged in.
Judge Barbara Crawford.
Yeah, and I'd like to echo what Judge Chris Garcia said and add that even though judges may have some latitude, we still have guidelines that we have to follow that are part of the law that we're bound by. But more importantly, what happens to each individual depends on that individual. Yeah. Depends on what's in front of us at the time. There's no blanket way of handling every single person. Every single person comes with their own background, their own history, their own goals for what they want to be. And we also have to remember that the criminal justice system is not just for punishment, but it's also for rehabilitation. So we also have to keep that in mind.
239-1310. Judge Ryan, why don't you respond, and I'll mention the phone number.
It's good for the people that the law allows flexibility, the judges. And that's why I said it's best that the recommended candidates from the Democrat Party be elected this May, because we're the ones that know how to apply, as I said, those human intangibles. I also want to mention very quickly about the e-filing. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable that the court will be totally electronic and e-filed. But people who don't have attorneys, or don't have computers, or don't know how to do it, they still will, I think, be able to come in, and the clerk will be instructed, I think, to help them, you know, scan their stuff, show them how to do it, so they won't be lost.
You can write in American, and it'll come out legal. It's a good thing. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name, so you can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Somebody did said, I had to go before Judge Crawford and can say unequivocally, she is fair and will listen. I was arrested based on a lie and wasn't able to get her predecessor to listen, which incidentally ended up costing the city money. Judge Crawford took the time to research the facts. She is definitely a great judge. Took three text messages to say that. That's good.
Right,
Let me go to the phones at 239-1310. Now I got to caution you. We're under all kind of restrictions because the judges that are here cannot comment on cases that were before them or before them on appeal. The attorneys that are here cannot comment on pending cases, cases that are on appeal, or cases that may come down to... The cue cards I have to read from the Indiana Supreme Court. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I have a question to the judges as mm-hmm. well as the attorneys. Okay, as a judge, how much input do you have on the plea bargain as far as, because, you know, I've sit in courts and I've seen people who, like, let's say, took a widget and they get more time than someone who has a DWI, and I don't understand, and you don't know the difference between the pleas and how much more time one person got than the other until you get in, you know, in the courtroom. So I want to know how much input do you have in the plea bargains. And also, when you assign an attorney, not a public offender, but I guess a regular attorney, why does it seem like that they just heard the people in and out, and they don't really fight for them? They just push papers in front of them, and I believe that's the reason why a lot of our young black males have felonies, is because they're shoved papers in front of them to sign, say, you do this, and you won't get this time. And I think that's something that really has to stop.
All right, let me rephrase that. I think the caller was asking a couple of questions. On plea bargain, when it finally comes to you, those of you in the criminal arena, when both parties come to you and say, Judge, this is going to be a plea bargain, and you have it before you, do you have any discretion and look and say, this is a great plea bargain or a lousy plea bargain, or because it's put in front of you, you guys just deal with it, and then explain to the community all the questions you have to ask the defendant, and is it true that if the defendant says no at any point, it stops, and that defendant has a right to suddenly change at the 11th hour and 59th minute and say, hey, man, I really don't want this plea.
That's true. There are a long list of things that the judge is required to go through with someone who is entering a plea agreement. Let me first say this. The plea agreement is an agreement that is between the person who's pleading guilty, the defendant and the state of Indiana. The judge doesn't have anything to do with the terms of the agreement that he reached. What happens with the judge is the judge then gets the plea agreement, looks at it, and goes through a whole series of things to make sure that that person understands what they're getting into and what this plea agreement is. Now, having said that, judges also have the ability to reject the plea agreement. If a judge does not feel that an agreement is fair or isn't, or that the individual is being pushed into something, then we have the ability to reject the plea agreement. And I say that because one of the things that I look at very closely when going through a plea agreement with a defendant is their body language. And I want to make sure that that person understands what it is they're doing when they're saying, I did this. And they have to say, I did this act. And I understand that I did it. And I know that when I did it, it was wrong. Now, if they can't come across, you know, like in baseball, they can't come across the plate with a strike on that, then it's out.
I know the Supreme Court has not allowed cameras in the courtroom in criminal trials in a long time. I think the last time around here was the Tyson thing. Would it help if people actually saw what goes on when it's the plea bargain time and all those doggone questions you are required to ask and people really understand that?
Do you mean the person, like the caller, and when she was observing a court proceeding, she had an appearance that was created that papers are pushed in front of a person.
Yeah, I think she was also talking about a second thing or the perception that the judge can just grab some attorney out of the room and say, hey, you're defending them, not a public defender. And I don't – that that's when right. I heard something, that reminds me of somebody in one of those TV show courts, and I don't think that is what happens here in Indiana.
No, this is Angela Davis, and I've been a public defender for part-time and full-time for 18 years and in private practice, and that would be if someone hires you. If you can't afford a lawyer, then one is appointed to you, and the judge then goes through and find out if the individual who is charged with the crime has the ability to hire their own lawyer or their family does. So if they have a – and not – all lawyers are created equally, so they get to hire whoever they want. But if you're assigned a public defender, you don't really get that choice. And so the public defender's office has tried really hard to have people limit the number of cases that they have so they're not overworked and have better training and more experienced lawyers trying cases that are, in front of them.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. So, judges, when you see me, you have my hands. These are not gang signs. These are just telling Chris what I want him to do. Let me go to another caller, another anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I am. Oh, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Ms. Brown. I'd like to address something. I have a son, and he has a mental illness, and he also been diagnosed ever since he was 8 years old. And the problem is that and the courts know this, and everyone else, they have put him in the courtroom with the mental illness. And I can understand why they keep locking him up and not to give him any other help, because he was in prison not too long ago, and he got out. And I'm telling you, it was worse than it was before, and I can understand that, because when he got home, he was okay, but then he stopped taking his medication, and then it went on and on and on. And then some of the inmates he was in there with, it was just overly too much, because he came out talking about he was this person and that person, and they was feeding him so many things in there, and it just made the things much worse for his condition. And this is what I try to understand. I can understand, because I keep addressing that to them, and they keep sending him back to this same location. And I'm like, this is not the help that he needs.
Let me ask, caller, let me ask this, because they can't ask you of this. Let me ask you, what is he being found guilty of?
This time he's in there for trespassing. And I was like, you know, he wasn't in his proper mind when he done that. And I have called the officers to my home to have him to go take him to the hospital so he can.
So he's down. So he's medication. So he's incarcerated in Marion County Jail.
Yes, and he's been in Plainfield, Pendleton,
okay,
just different areas, and And it's the same old, same old.
Let me make a broad. They cannot comment on his specific case, but let me ask the judges and the candidates the broader question.
Okay.
Do we need in this county to really take a hard look at the mental health services that are available, particularly for nonviolent offenders, to hopefully get the help so they don't become violent offenders? And Judge Chris?
Judge Chris Garcia.
Yeah.
It is absolutely immoral, the idea of a mentally ill person being held in a Marion County jail when they are arrested trying to get the going to the very place that they need to go to get the help that they need. And yet we're handcuffed in a lot of ways by the lack of resources in the community. Judge Cook Crawford is working on some alternatives to incarceration for the people who are mentally ill charged in Marion County.
And that's correct. And you're absolutely right. Every one of us who are on the bench right now have had experiences with having people come in front of us who have mental illnesses who do not belong in the jail. That is not where they should be. Unfortunately, I and several other judges are trying to work to set up a mental health court that would perhaps better serve those individuals. There's also what is called a PAIR program that's out at Community Court on Virginia Avenue, and that is presided over by Judge Serto. Unfortunately, they have a very limited number of people that they can accept into their program and on a limited the kinds of cases they can accept are limited. The trespass thing that you mentioned sounds like the kind of case that could go there. So I would suggest that you talk to whoever is representing your son, and perhaps they can give you some better direction as to that as a possible better outcome for him.
All right, great question. 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We're talking with candidates running for the Democratic nomination for Marion County Superior Court Judge, incumbent Judge Annie Chris Garcia, Judge Barbara Cook Crawford, candidate Angela Davis, Judge David Dreyer, candidate Tatrice Flowers, candidate Christina Kleinman, Judge James Osborne, and candidate Marcel Pratt. 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me a text message at 37890 keyword Amos, or an email at praiseindy.com. More after these. With our last group of judges, I asked this question because this came up last week when we heard from the dad of a victim of violence, and the perpetrator was found not guilty in a court of law by jury. And the father was frustrated for two reasons. One, he felt the prosecutor didn't do their job. The defense attorney did their job and was upset that the jury did not have any African-Americans on it. How important, and as Chatrice during the break, your colleague said that you were like the jury expert here. How important is Chatrice Flowers' jury service, and is it time that the court that the judges of the Superior Court make a public plea for all residents of Marion County? When you get that note in the mail for jury duty, it's serious business, and it's an important part of citizenship.
It is a very critical part of citizenship, Amos. It is one of the most important fundamental concepts we have as United States citizens, other than exercising our right to vote. The reason that my recommended colleague candidates were teasing me is because last year I presided over 13 jury trials in 4 out of my 5 courts. I have already presided over 4 jury trials this year, and I have one scheduled in a couple of days.
Were there diversity in those juries, or were they monochromatic?
There was diversity in those mm-hmm. juries. There was diversity in the panel, mm-hmm. And it is important that people appear for jury duty. I can say this, that I know the two ladies that run the jury pool very well because my office is down there. And I constantly hear about people that get deferrals and they don't want to come down for jury service and they look at it as a hassle. But it's very important because you have to think that you would want someone that you know to have a fair and impartial jury, if you know that someone that was having a trial, be it civil or criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask all of you, and they're going to round robin on the mics very quickly. There's this controversy of where should your courtrooms be, particularly those of you on the criminal court. Let me start with you, Judge Osborne, since you're up there as the assistant thingamajig. How critical is it that the court system stay in the downtown area?
Well, from my perspective, it's very important. Indianapolis, Marion County, is roughly a square, about 20 miles square. And so if you focus the courts in a downtown area where the bus lines run, and you have to consider, first of all, I mean, we're talking about a constitutional access to the court system. Everybody should have an equal opportunity to get to the courts. Not everybody drives a car. Not everybody can even afford to get on the bus at some points in time. So you have to try to make it as easy as possible for citizens to come to their government for the purpose of making their case, whatever that case may be. As you know, Amos, and I think you've written about it on a couple of occasions now, there have been some different places that have been considered for the construction of a new criminal justice center. And I think from the court's perspective, and I've talked to most of the judges that have been involved, and my colleagues here can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think everybody is more interested in having a location that is downtown in some fashion, that's easily reached by bus, that serves the public, so that somebody perhaps way out in Lawrence Township on the border next to Hancock County doesn't have to take 2 hours basically to get across the county over to, for example, one of the sites that was talked about was the airport. And not just the airport where the old terminal is, but we're talking about the airport on the very county line of Hendricks County. So for some people, that could be a two-hour trip by bus. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen.
Let me go to Jessica right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, I have a question regarding the recommendation process.
Uh-huh.
The guests keep saying that they were recommended, but the Indy Star had reported that no one was considered for recommendation unless they paid $14,000 to the party. And I just wondered if there was any answer as to why that is.
Isn't it correct to say that both political parties here in Marion County have an endorsement or recommendation system, and the parties ask candidates who go through that system to pay a fee? So that's not a Democratic thing; that's a Republican thing. If the Libertarians, were putting up judges, they'd probably do the same thing. It's a way for the party to fund itself.
Yeah, this is Judge Dave Dreyer. The recommendation process is actually a good one for the public. The money that's paid is to participate in a convention. It's like an application fee, I guess. And you get to go through it. And if you don't get to be recommended, you get your money back. So we're not buying anything, you're not losing anything necessarily. And so the money goes to fund the convention. The money goes to help fund the party. So we 8 recommended judicial candidates. The money that we paid, it helps the party educate the public about us, to mail stuff about us, to organize and educate the public about who we are. We didn't get recommended because we paid money. We got recommended because we entered a process and we went to a convention, and 500 people, and these are people who represent the public. They work at polls. They're people who are attuned and know what they're doing. Those are the people that voted for us and chose us. And that's a great – I think it's a great function for the public to know who those people think they should vote for.
And then Democrats will make the final decision 2 weeks from today.
At the primary, yeah, then the public gets to vote. So I think it's a good process.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I first want to congratulate each and every last candidate that's on there, but I'm giving more of a comment. There are two of the candidates, Mr. Pratt and Dutch Flowers. I was a former bailiff, and I had the privilege of working with both of them, and I want to wish them good luck. I think they would make great judges. Judge Flowers has been very, very, very partial, very fair, and Judge Pratt, soon to be Judge Pratt, hopefully, his ability as a lawyer, as an attorney, and how he really works with people is a blessing. So I'm hoping to see both of them on upon being a judge soon. Thank you.
All right, let me. I'm going to go back reverse alphabetical order now, and then we'll see how sharp the candidates are. We're going reverse alphabetical order, and the final question we ask of every candidate: if people want more information about your campaign, you guys are running for the Democratic nomination for Marion County Superior Court Judge. Marcel Pratt, we'll start with you. How do people get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me. I'm located on Facebook for one. Also, I have no problem giving out my email address. MarcelPratt@sbcglobal.net. Also, you can reach me at my office/campaign headquarters at 317-686-2244. I'm sure a whole lot of people know that number by heart. That's been my number for about 25 years now. So give me a call. I'll be happy to talk to you about any questions, any concerns you have. And just to comment on the last anonymous caller, I think that's one of my, I guess, attributes of running and hopefully sitting on the bench. I do take the time and listen to each and every person that comes across. I pay attention to their specific needs. And I think I, again, as I said earlier, I've done a great service to the community over the 30 years I've been practicing, and I'm going to continue doing it.
All right, Judge Jim Osborne.
Well, first of all, if anyone wants to reach me, they can reach me on my website at Osborne for Judge, OSBORNFORJUDGE .com, and I respond to any emails that you might send, unless, of course, you're talking about a case that I have in front of me. I'd be happy to have any kind of conversation you might like. I'm honored to be a part of this group of eight who have been recommended by the Marion County Democratic Party. I think we all stand for public service. We all stand for being fair and impartial to the people of this county. I think in the 6 years that I've been a judge and the 21 years that I've been an attorney, that I've always worked to uphold those ideals. And I would appreciate, as would all the other candidates here who are my colleagues, we would appreciate your support on May 6th.
Candidate Christina Kleinman.
Sure. I just want to echo what Judge Osborne said. Thank you so much, Amos, for having us on. You can always reach me via email at KleinmanForJudge@yahoo.com. I am on Facebook, Christina Kleinman. I'm not as apt to check that, but please email me with any questions, thoughts, or concerns.
Candidate Shatrice Flowers.
Thank you very much to the last anonymous caller. I really appreciate it. And also thank you, Amos, for having myself as well as the other seven recommended Superior Court judge candidates on today. I can be reached via email at shatrice.flowers@sbcglobal.net or shatrice.flowers@gmail.com.
Judge David Dreyer.
David Dreyer on Facebook and judgedreyer.com. It's very important, Amos, that everyone vote for the 8 Democrat recommended judicial candidates on May 6th. Thank you very much.
Candidate Angela Davis.
Angela Davis, adavis124@comcast.net is my email, and anyone can reach me at my office at McClure Davis at 235 North Delaware, and the phone number there is 221-0800.
Judge Barbara Cook Crawford.
DLCCrawford@gmail.com. That's where I can be reached. And I know I'm hogging a little bit here.
But you're a judge. You're allowed.
I wanted to say something to the individual who talked about jury participation. Mm-hmm. And I heard a disturbing statistic about the jury selection process. People who are sent subpoenas to appear, we get about 60%. Of those who are sent subpoenas who respond, who come in to serve. Of that 60%, the ones who are from the African-American community, 80% of them do not respond.
Oh, we got to do
that
better
is, now. That is really disturbing. So if we want our criminal justice system to work, the jury is an essential part of that. And so when you get a subpoena, come down.
All right, and Judge Annie Christ Garcia.
I can be reached at anniechristgarcia@gmail.com, and we all very much appreciate the time you've given us today, Amos. Thank you.
All right, Judge Annie Chris Garcia, Judge Barbara Cook Crawford, candidates Angela Davis, Judge David Dreyer, candidate Chatrice Flowers, candidate Christina Kleiman, Judge James Osborne, and candidate Marcel Pratt. They're running for the Democratic nomination for Marion County Superior Court Judge. Guys, thank you very, very much for being with us.